You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Now I'm a union man, amazed at what I am. I say what I think, that the company stinks. Yes, I'm a union man. When we meet in the local hall, I'll be voting with them all. With a hell of a shout, it's out, brothers, out. And the rise of the company's fall.
Oh, you don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. Till the day I die. Till the day I die.
Good morning.
Good morning, comrades and members here in Melbourne. Once again, you're listening to Fire Up, the Maritime Union's radio station here by 3CR. Today, we joined with a guest who is fast becoming regular on the show. It's the second time we've had him. Unfortunately, not the best circumstances to be having him in again this time. However, it will be the very interesting, and it's an important discussion for the nation, I think. That's Thomas Mayer, the MUA's National Indigenous Officer. We'll get back to Tom in a moment. We've also got Melissa McCullum, who is the Youth Delegate here in Victoria. And as always, we've got Annie, the superstar producer from 3CR. And you're currently listening to Aaron, the National Organiser of the MUA. Unfortunately, Dave, the other regular on the show, is currently on leave, unfortunately for me, but very fortunate for Dave. So what we'll do is I'll quickly run through a brief industrial report now, and then we'll jump into one of the most important discussions this nation should be having with Tom, Mel, and the producer. So just quickly, comrades, we've seen a whole heap of industrial activity over the last couple of weeks. We continue to have ongoing disputes with DP World that are in the Commission and other various courts. Alongside that, we're continuing to push through with Part A of our negotiations. With Patrick's, we've approached the company to try and kick the negotiations off again, even though we've just been through a round of redundancies there that unfortunately saw 30 MUA members losing their employment. Some of them, thankfully, were at retirement age. However, it's never good to see jobs lost on the waterfront. We've seen down on the tugs at Spitzer, there have been a series of discussions between the company and the various unions appropriate around redundancies and the loss of work from the pandemic across Geelong and here in Melbourne as well. We've also seen Cube and Lynx have a significant downturn in work. Not only here in Melbourne and Victoria, but around the port, around the world, country. And the companies are currently in discussions with the unions around how we apply JobKeeper and the various other arrangements we're going to do to try and mitigate redundancies and job losses there. Down at TT Line, we've seen, again, due to the pandemic, a downturn in work. And unfortunately, we're having discussions with them around trying to maintain as much labour as possible. I guess the one good news story for the week is this Friday, so tomorrow, we will be commencing the first round of negotiations with VICT, the third terminal operator here in Melbourne. It'll be the first time we've started negotiations with the MUA, and hopefully we'll be looking forward to getting an agreement down there that matches the industry standards. Now, obviously, there's a lot of other work happening around the port and around the state that we haven't been able to touch on today, but I've just kept that quite brief because we, as I said, we have Thomas Mayer on the line, and Thomas is the National Indigenous Officer for the Maritime Union and, in fact, the broader Construction, Forestry, Maritime, Mining and Energy Union, so the bigger new union that we joined with not too long ago. Tom is a Larrakia man from up in Darwin, he resides. And we've got Tom on today because as we wanted to have a bit of a discussion for the benefit of our members and parts of the broader public around what we've seen happening in the news with the Black Lives Matter campaign over in the States and how that campaign has some harrowing similarities to us here in Australia with our deaths in custody. I know that's been since my entire lifetime. I was born in 1990. The Royal Commission into Deaths in Custody was in 1991, and since that time, we've still had well over 400 deaths in custody. And as far as I know, there's not been a single charge laid against any of the authorities that could have prevented the deaths of our First Nations peoples in custodies and or that have actually actively killed them. Some of these people have been as young as 13, some as old as 79. Tom, this is going to be a hard conversation for Australia, but where do you want to start it, mate?
Yeah, I guess we've got to start by letting listeners know that, you know, as a trigger warning, we're going to be discussing some pretty hard things, including some Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people that have passed deaths in custody. I guess we can start with the, you know, what's happening in the US, the reaction to, you know, the real injustice and the systemic racism there in the police force and then in the entire country there. I mean, it's not just the police that have murdered a man in Minnesota. It's Minnesota, yeah, recently. Minneapolis, was it? Yeah. But also, not that long before, there was Armand Aubrey, that was murdered by two white fellas that said that they were, you know, chasing a robber, but was all caught on video, and the man was only going for a jog. You know, a young man, his life has ended too early, and murdered in broad daylight. And so I think, you know, here in Australia, hearing some of the commentary about the riots that have followed that, and I mean, what do people expect? But then seeing it was Channel 9, a journalist, a white journalist from Australia, saying that she that there was, you know, not so much of an understanding about these sorts of injustices in Australia, just goes to show the ignorance that we have to deal with here, mate. I mean, it's just such a major problem. And, you know, sometimes the only way you get attention, and we understand that as unionists, is to have some dissent and disrupt the system.
It's interesting you should say that, because Morrison, our Prime Minister, sent a tweet saying, oh, thank goodness that we don't have this racism in Australia, which is quite
bizarre. Isn't that just a height of ignorance, you know? The absolute height of ignorance. We are a country that is built on stolen land that has benefited from the genocide of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, the attempted genocide. We have survived the attempts to then wipe us out by assimilation and trying to punish out of ourselves, our culture and our languages. And it just continues today, you know. I mean, that a prime minister can say such a thing on stolen Aboriginal land is just a disgrace. And he's no different than President Trump in that regard, you know, the ignorance. And it's just so shameful.
Yeah, it really is. And it all really stems back to the initial invasion, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, truth-telling isn't only about the past. It's also about our present in regards to what we're calling for in the Uluru Statement, a Makarrata Commission to supervise that process. And, you know, we envision that when we set up a formal national process of truth-telling and agreement-making, Makarrata, and Makarrata, for the listeners, is a Yolngu word. So the people of Northeast Arnhem Land, Makarrata is a process. and it's a process that is still a way of dispute resolution today, where people bring with them the truth in their hearts and with the commitment to reach an agreement on how to settle their differences. And at the end of that process, at settlement, have a much closer bond between the disputing parties, to the point where if we're talking about an individual disputing with another, you know, one family disputing with the other, that person would be accepted into the other family as you know, as loved as a family member, you know, and that's the vision of the Uluru Statement, to have this process. But to go to the point here, it's not only about historical truth telling; it's about the truth of the present, and the truth of, as you mentioned earlier, 400 deaths in custody without justice. It's the truth of the social issues that have been caused by our history that exist today. It's the truth that we don't have a say on the decisions that are made about us in the parliaments of Australia. And all of these things, talking like from a union perspective, from a union organiser, official's perspective, the truth is leverage, you know. The truth is something that is not something that should be done first, as some people say, but is something that needs to be used contemporaneously to achieve a settlement and agreements on how we repair that damage and what is given over as recompense for the way that we've been treated. And so that's the idea of truth telling. And you need a voice to be able to use that truth. And when we talk about the deaths in custody, what is happening in the United States and what is happening here, the same issue, systemic racism based on a colonial structure that hasn't included people of colour and particularly Indigenous people in this country, we need to change that system. We need to reform that system so those voices are included. And when we're talking about the violence that police are perpetrating against us and the violence that decision makers are perpetrating against us through their failed policies and legislation, the only way to address that is to influence those decisions and have our sovereign voice in the middle of decision making so that they don't, so that system can be reformed. And that's really what the Uluru Statement calls for, and it's a solution to this problem, and it won't be addressed until we have a voice that can be unapologetic and sovereign in that it speaks for ourselves and you know, based on people that we elect to represent us.
Yeah.
Two things happened this week. I mean, it's Reconciliation Week, or coming to the end of it, but...
Yep.
Two things happened. The obliteration of the 40,000-year-old cave with artefacts in it by Rio Tinto, as well as the High Court decision that gave recognised title to their land, homelands in Western Australia for a particular Aboriginal group, clan group. Two, amazingly different things.
Yeah, very different things. And I'll touch on both of them, though. I mean, when we talk about what Rio Tinto did, I mean that's like to murder, you know, for us. You know, that is, you know, I mean, country is seen as a living thing in our culture. You know, it's part of us. And particularly when we're talking about such a significant site with so much of our historical, you know, ancestry recorded there, it's just an absolute disgrace that happened there. And you know, I mean, it's a bit like we talk about in the union movement, you know, about accountability, you know, kill a worker, go to jail, that sort of thing. And I mean, somebody should go to jail for what happened in Western Australia, there on our country. And again, it goes to the way that we can affect legislation in this country and policy. And while a voice, there's no guarantee that a constitutionally enshrined voice, as called for in the Uluru Statement, would have stopped that. Certainly, though, it could have, it would be pursuing with national coordination and the strength that comes from unity in that sense, to change that legislation so that it never happens again, to seek the federal government to implement federal laws that will ensure that it doesn't happen in any state, and so we're not playing catch up anywhere, and then also hold Rio Tinto to account in the way that a union holds companies to account when they do such terrible things to workers, and pursue them with all vigour in a campaign that seeks to ensure that they will never do it again, you know? And so that's the value of the voice there. On the other, I mean, it's a great achievement when a mob is able to defend their country and win back native title. But it's far too difficult and, again, inconsistent. And that's, again, why we need better coordination amongst our First Nations to be able to change native title legislation so that we don't have to appeal such things in the future. To be able to have the right to veto when a mining company wants to rip up our land and our sacred sites. And, you know, like, it seems like I'm repeating myself, but everything has a root cause, you know, and if we are unable to affect the highest level of decision-making in this country, as only 3% of the population and all the challenges that that has as far as influencing that sort of thing, and with the reality that we are not going to take back our sovereignty in a East Timorese style fighting for independence, or an African style, we are a majority of the population fighting for independence, then this is the most important thing that we can do as a people, both Indigenous and non-Indigenous, is to build our structure, our union, our unity in a way that goes beyond just beating your chest at a rally saying we need to be united, but actually doing that work. And it's important that people understand that.
Just touching on then, as Eddie said, it is Reconciliation Week, and Tom and I and Eddie were talking about a video that's going around social media at the moment of a 17-year-old kid. And Tom, do you want to explain what happened? Because then we'll get Mel to jump in, because Mel has also, obviously, the video of George Floyd, the African-American man over in the States, is what kicked off the civil unrest, or the riots over there, or the protests in response to it. If Tom, you want to just quickly give us your thoughts on that, and then we'll jump over to Mel, and then I want to try and double around to talking about progressive activism that can come out of it.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I just before I jumped onto this, I saw on social media a 17-year-old Aboriginal boy, I think it was in Sydney, and I don't know much more about it, but what I did see in the video was that the lad, I mean, he gave a bit of cheek, but he didn't deserve what came next. He had his legs ripped out from underneath him and face slammed, and then just like Floyd in the US recently, the police officer then put his knees into him and pinned him down. And that's just today, I think it was. This is still going on. It is as much a reality in Australia as it is in the US, and we've got to start turning up in greater numbers to rallies about Indigenous rights and calling out this stuff and show better solidarity with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders. And as I said, go to the crux of the issue, which is to influence the legislation and policy with a voice and truth-telling.
Yeah, well, I just watched the video for the first time of George, and definitely in shock and distressed, and definitely in tears before. I'm in shock at how that went down. Within 17 minutes, the man was dead. I think he said it 16 times, I can't breathe. And yeah, I can't believe it. I'm still in shock. I'm speechless. So.
And that's not too...
Yeah, it's a crazy, crazy world that we live in. It shouldn't be happening. And sorry.
Completely paralyzed and quite disturbing for anybody that sees it. But we've seen that happen here in Australia, right? So I'm with David Dunga, the Dungarian.
Yes.
Killed in custody as well.
Yeah, and a shout out to David Dungay's family as well. They are still fighting for justice, as many of the families are. And we need to show our solidarity with these families, you know, as members of the union movement and as, you know, citizens of this country and people of decency. It's just shocking, and you know, our solidarity with those families.
For our Melbourne listeners, we actually had a rally this Saturday on the steps of Parliament in support of both the Black Lives Matter campaign and the deaths of Captain Keith Franco, kicking off at 2 p.m. If you want to get down there and show support, obviously social distancing, so stay 1.5 metres apart and if you're sick, stay home. But we would be great if everybody showed out and showed our support for First Nations comrades. Tom, as union members and activists, what else are we able to do to show our support to the First Nation people here of Australia in support for this campaign?
Yeah. Well, I think firstly, and I'll repeat it because it's important, show up, you know, at these sorts of rallies and things. You know, public dissent is extremely important. Our protests, our raising these issues to the point where they cannot be ignored. But more than that, we also need to be attacking the systemic problem, you know, or supporting Indigenous people on addressing the systemic problem. And the only national campaign that exists on that is the Uluru Statement from the Heart. I encourage comrades to go to www.fromtheheart.com.au, which is a new education project that we have. That has campaign tools. Pretty soon it'll have a portal for people to be able to express their support, you know, individually or in groups, like a sort of like an online petition type of thing that we'll be establishing, and share the words of the Uluru Statement around as, you know, a very visionary and hopeful invitation to the Australian people to walk with us towards a referendum that can permanently change the way the interface with us in decision-making. And so that is the most important thing to do. And share that information and get involved in any way that we ask once you sign up on that. You know, we'll be communicating ways to get involved over the coming months. This is a crucial time.
Yep.
There will be a public submissions process coming up after July about the design of a model. The government, the coalition government, is not supportive of underpinning or constitutionally enshrining the voice, underpinning the voice with the constitution so that it's permanent and cannot be attacked by a hostile government or destroyed by a hostile government. And so we'll be looking for comrades, individuals, organisations, unions to make submissions in that process to say that even though the government has said that they will not underpin the voice by the constitution, as in how this model will be recommended from this advisory group. We want it on the record that we understand that the Uluru Statement was a national consensus and that this is the most important part of the model of a voice, that it is underpinned by the constitution.
And that's the vehicle we're going to use to try and dismantle some of this systemic racism that we see throughout the country, yeah. Maiden, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, I put it this way, you know, I mean, for all of our protests in Australia around these deaths in custody, what have we seen as far as accountability goes? We've seen nothing.
Nothing.
Right? And I say this to activists, and I say this to activists that have been involved in the struggle for Indigenous rights and brothers and sisters that are listening to this. For all of our protests, for all of our actions, we have not held one of these bastards to account. And that includes the politicians that are enacting things like the intervention, that are cutting the guts out of funding to services to remote communities. Which one of these politicians have we held to account with our actions? None of them.
None.
That tells us we need to change our strategy. That tells me that we need to do better at these actions on the streets, but we also need other layers of our advocacy. And so while it is much more romantic, you know, as in much more, it feels good to get on the streets and be radical, you're not being radical if you're not changing anything. And so the most important thing is to take on what seems less romantic, which is to, you know, change the constitution so that we're always heard. But that, I tell you what, that is the key. And it's like for unionists to understand, anyone that's been involved in unions, it is us establishing our union as 3% of the population in a way that 97% of the population, their representatives, cannot get rid of again. And it's a powerful thing.
Yeah, it is. It's a very powerful thing. And I support your campaign personally, and I wish there was more I could do. And I know that that our union does definitely support the campaign, mate.
Very clear about being firm against power, because I listened to the man who was put in charge of bringing him a home report, a very nice, very firm conservative chap. He was a High Court judge when he was given the job. He was absolutely traumatised by the stories that were brought to him, and he worked very hard to try and change the 98% understanding of this. The establishment spent a long time trying to destroy his character in the public arena when they couldn't, because he didn't have a bad character. But he was part of the establishment. But that's how hard they hold on to their power. It's about
And how many years ago was that? That was more than 20 years ago now, wasn't
exactly.
it? Or about 20
yeah,
years
yeah.
ago?
Yeah, long time ago.
So the point of that is, you know, where was the national campaign
to
pursue those recommendations? Because my understanding is none of those recommendations from those reports
have been implemented in full or at all.
That's right.
Exactly. And so, you know, I mean, you think of it as unionists. Where is the national arm of our union that has vigorously pursued that, using all points of leverage to see that those recommendations are achieved? Now, going back to the subject of this discussion in the beginning, which is deaths in custody, it breaks my heart when I see the families of these children that are killed by the system so violently, when we are protesting for justice and we always fall into calling for a royal commission or a coronial inquiry, which is in the system, which is the existing system, which is the people that lead it are chosen by the system, and even the recommendations that come out of them reach the roadblock, which is the parliament, yeah. As in implementing those recommendations. So you see, it all still goes to our ability to affect the decision makers in parliament. We must build our structure of unity. And I get so frustrated when, and I hope the listeners, this has helped, you know, and I hope it's listened to widely, because it's an important point to understand. Well, there's so much to gain, right? There's 60,000 years of culture that, you know, that by changing our rule book, by altering, you know, the thing that that basically governs all of us, to include First Nations people, then we're including the voice of the environment. Then we're, we can start to address these statistics that we should be ashamed of. You know, it's there's nothing to lose from it. You know, we should be ashamed of those statistics, and we should want to change them as well. I just want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to all the comrades again on this very important program. And I just want the comrades to stick fat, stay solid, and if you're not in a union, join it now, and let's walk together.
Thanks, Tom, and thanks, Mel, thanks, Annie. And the song we have for you today is Black Lives Matter by an Australian artist called Birds. Birds is a Bajala man. And he sings this song, and I think it was released a couple of years ago, so we'll throw over to you. Thanks, everybody.
justice ever for my people. What you finna do? They running the shit, we're running the clip. When the government's all in it, the Royal Commission ain't shit. Man, I'm scared of getting caught by a motherfucking cop. This one for y'all, this one for Hickey. Next, it could be our side. We say Black Lives Matter, but shit, the fact of the matter is we just Black Matter. This shit keep happening. Let me hear your oh my, oh my. Let me hear your oh my, oh my.
Listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.